You're listening to the Vineyard Milwaukee podcast. For more information about Vineyard Milwaukee, go to vineyardmilwaukee.com. Now, here's our podcast.
All right. Good morning, everybody. So I'm curious, do you all believe in love at first sight? Do you think that's a thing? No? I do. So the day I fell in love with Dave was, so it was right before Christmas break, my senior year of college. And now I knew Dave, we were what I describe as just like acquaintances. So I'm sure we'd had some interaction before, but definitely not any particular meaningful reaction that I remember. And so this day I was in this like student office. He was walking down the hall and he had popped in to ask me a question because he was like the rec life director and I had done some like volleyball stuff for him and he was supposed to pay me, but he never did. But anyway, that should have been a little hint about my future. But he popped in to kind of see if I got my paycheck and our eyes locked. And somehow in a very short amount of time, we had this like very intense, meaningful connection. And we were talking about the way we wanted to live our lives and just how we felt called. And I don't know, it was just this like moment. We had this moment, right? Now he'll later, when he tells the story, he said, I looked up at him and he was like captivated by my eyes. And I remember being really taken up by what I sensed was his sort of longing and desire for a life of adventure and risk in the kingdom. And I didn't really have the language of the kingdom, but that's really what it was. And so anyway, from there, within a very short period of time following Christmas break, we had our first date. And our date was kind of just an around campus thing, but we ended up like staying up all night talking till like 4 a.m. and just had this like really kind of deep connection conversation. I remember going back to my dorm room and writing in my journal as I often did, and I remember writing, I just went on a date with my husband tonight. And so here we were, destined for a life of love and adventure. So about a year and a half later, we were married and living on this beautiful Salvation Army campground in this quaint little town of Sharon, Massachusetts. And there was this big old historic house in the campground. And we, as part of our housing for the job that Dave got, was to be on the bottom floor of this beautiful old house. And so here we were, married, my soulmate, living in this beautiful house in this quaint little town of Sharon, Massachusetts. And I was depressed and missed being single. I missed living with my friends in the city. I didn't get that dream teaching job that I was going for. The end goal of marriage and a beautiful house and a dreaming future was not actually achieving the results that I anticipated that it would. I wasn't particularly happy or fulfilled. And neither was my poor husband, who thought he was marrying this like really fun, you know, outgoing, like exciting woman, because all his experiences of me had been on a college campus surrounded by people. He didn't have a lot of experiences with the melancholy, angsty, inner head Rebecca that shows up when things are quiet. And so we realized rather quickly that we didn't really know each other at all. And we certainly weren't going to make each other's dreams come true. I remember I was telling the teens a story the other day because we were celebrating Josue's 18th birthday. And so we were sharing like memories of birthdays. And I said I remembered my first birthday as a married woman. So Dave and I had got married pretty like about a week or two before my birthday. So we had this big wedding, and we went away to this great honeymoon, and we came back, and a week later, it was my birthday. And so, of course, one of the things, those of you who've been married for a while know, you come into marriage with very different expectations for a lot of things. Birthdays is just one of them. And so in my household, birthdays were a big deal. When it was your birthday, you had a family party, and you had like a party with your friends. And the family party, like literally we would decorate our dining room with crepe paper. My mom would make your favorite dinner and whatever dessert you wanted, and your family would all get you a gift. And then you'd have a little slumber party with your friends. And, you know, it was great. Dave's house was like, oh yeah, it's your birthday this week. Here's a card with some cash in it. You know, like, wasn't quite the big big to do, right? So that day of my birthday, when Dave came home from work, no gift or card or flowers, and just was like, oh, hey, it's your birthday. What do you want to do tonight? Of course, my very mature 20-some-year-old reaction was to run and throw myself on our newly married bed and burst into tears sobbing. And Dave's like, whoa, like, what just happened here? And that was just the beginning of many, as you can imagine, of these sorts of angsty, confusing, emotionally wrought conversations around expectations and needs and all sorts of stuff that we bring in to marriage. And so if you've been married for any length of time, you know what I'm talking about. So how did these two starry-eyed young adults, ready to link arms and save the world, become these depressive, anxious, overly sensitive, disconnected, avoidant, self-centered people? We didn't. That's who we already were, and marriage didn't change that or fix it, it just revealed it. As many of you know, we've been in this series for a while called Spiritually Formed, and this little subtext is spiritually formed in relationships. And so we've been talking about the nature of our relationships and how God uses them to form us spiritually and to grow us up. And so this week, we're going to be specifically talking about marriage. And this is a very specific kind of relationship that has the potential to kind of make or break you. And so now, before those of you who are in the room who are not married, tune me out. This really is not a message just for married people or people who want to get married. Because what I'm going to talk about today is really more about spiritual friendship, which should be something we all experience and encounter and should be the basis of our marriage. And so this is an invitation for everyone. Marriage is just a type of spiritual friendship that has a significant potential to form you into the person you were created to be, your true self. If you've been tracking with us, you know, a couple weeks ago, I talked about what it means to be moving toward, journeying toward your true self, the self of you that's hidden with Christ. And so we've been looking over and over again, we've been using the same scripture in Colossians 3, and this is a letter that Paul wrote where he talks about this, what it means to kind of straddle two worlds, that your life is now hidden with Christ on high. That is your true self. And what we're working out in this world is shedding off the false self and moving toward the true self that will be fully realized in the ages to come. But we're moving closer to that. And spiritual formation is all about that. It's moving into who you really are, your true self. And so look with me at Colossians 3. I'm just going to start with the first little section of verses 1 through 4. It says, since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things, for you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. And so I talked about what it means to live and love from this place of your hidden life with Christ in God, seated at the right hand, seated with Christ in the heavenly realms. In other words, your true self, your redeemed, your restored, your unique, beautiful self. Who you are today with your wounds healed. Who you are today without depression and anxiety and perfectionism and distorted attachments, without the grudges and all the disappointments and without your critical spirit and your selfish ambition. But who you are with all that stuff being removed and restored and redeemed. Ephesians 2:6 puts it this way, and God raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus. So if you're a follower of Jesus, we're living in both worlds. We're straddling these two worlds. The self that God sees right now, who you are right now is who God sees is who you are in the heavenly realms. Your life that's hidden with Christ, and you are glorious. You are beautiful, and you are whole. You are an unrepeatable image bearer of God. You have eternal value, meaning, and purpose, and we are profoundly loved. This is who you are. But we're also here now, right, in this room. We're still struggling. We're still reaching toward that true self. And this is the journey. This is the working out of our salvation with fear and trembling, our healing, our formation in this in-between time. And so we are called as brothers and sisters to assist each other on this journey toward the end result of becoming our true selves. So Colossians chapter 3, verse 12 says, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you were called to peace. And be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another." And I'll just stop there. We assist each other by cultivating an environment of love and grace. We bear with each other on the journey. We forgive each other. We teach and admonish each other. All for the purpose of assisting and supporting each other to be formed into this beautiful, glorious, true persons that you are right now. And so, in no other relationship is this more difficult than in marriage. But no other relationship has the potential to do this more than in marriage. Most people think that marriage was designed to make us happy. However, a biblical understanding of marriage is that it was designed to make you holy. Now, at the risk of depressing everybody and preaching a very grim message about marriage, I want to qualify that it is quite possible for you to be happy in your marriage and to have a thriving marriage. Many people do, including myself. And this is also a biblical view of marriage, that it would bring you joy and satisfaction. But part of the journey of moving to this place of experiencing a life-giving marriage is coming to this understanding that marriage wasn't designed for your personal self-gratification, self-actualization, and fulfillment. And your spouse cannot be your savior. If you think that your spouse is meant to complete you or to save you or is responsible for your wholeness or happiness, he or she will never be good enough, and you will never be satisfied. I remember my mom telling me once, not that long ago into my own marriage, but she had been, you know, married 40 plus years. I remember her telling me once that at first marriage was deeply disappointing. But she said, but now it's better than she could have ever imagined. Because she persisted long enough to discover the true purpose of marriage and then began to experience the beauty and the joy that's found there. So today I want to talk about how for all of us, how we can step into this call of assisting each other on this journey of becoming our true selves by cultivating relationships based in truth and love. And so this is true for all of us. But I'm going to more specifically address what this might look like in a marriage relationship in real time. Because this is hard. This is hard in any kind of relationship, in a friendship, with our brothers and sisters, and it's really hard in a marriage relationship. Because if you are married and your spouse, you and your spouse are followers of Jesus, your primary roles with each other, not husband and wife, they are brother and sister. And so you have a unique spiritual friendship, and this needs to be the basis of your marriage. So let's go back to the text for a minute and flesh this out. Like, what does this look like in real time? So let's look again at Colossians 3. It says, "Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things, for you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God." So I talked about this 2 weeks ago. We have to regularly ask for God to give us kingdom lenses to see each other and to see our spouses. The lenses to see our spouses the way God does, the glorious image bearer of God that they are in the heavenly realms, to see them that way. And we need the empowering spirit to help us do this. And so we alone have a front row seat to the most beautiful, truest qualities of our spouse and the ugliest, right? The false self, the parts of ourself that are still struggling, that are still in process. And they have a front row seat with us. The truth is, we all have shadow sides. We all have the sides that we get really good at hiding around most people. But the closer you get to anyone, the more intimate and authentic your relationships become, the easier it is for these shadow sides to be exposed. And when you're married, you know this if you've been married, you cannot hide your shadow side. You can try, but eventually it's too hard. It's way too much work. And so you can't hide your disordered attachments and selfish ambition, and you can't hide your triggers and your critical spirit. You just can't. You'll become very exposed and therefore very vulnerable to this other person. And it is therefore in the context of this unique relationship that we find the potential for the most healing or the most hurting. So how might we be agents of healing in our marriages? And before I dive into this next section, a lot of times when we hear talks on marriages, we immediately think, my spouse really needs to hear this. I hope they're listening. And I want to encourage you right now to listen for yourself. Listen for yourself. Don't think, oh yeah, I hope they're paying attention right now. You pay attention to yourself in this role. How can you be an agent of healing in your marriage? And so first, I want to say we need to cultivate, and if you're not married, this is true for any important relationships you have. How can you bring this into your small group? How can you bring this into your close friendships? How can you bring this into your family of origin? First, you need to cultivate an emotionally safe environment of love. This is an environment where everyone in the family is invited to bring their whole selves to the table. It's an environment where I can tell the truth about how I'm experiencing you, even if I'm angry at you, and you can receive this because you know I'm not going to leave you, I'm going to forgive you, and I'm going to continue to choose to love you. Tim Keller, in his book, The Meaning of Marriage, which I literally read this week, it could literally be a three-part sermon. So I'm just scratching the surface here, and I have the book available if anyone wants it. I'm willing to give it away today. Okay, but it's excellent. And he says, although I don't agree with every single thing in there, but it's still excellent. He says, one of the most basic skills in marriage is the ability to tell the straight, unvarnished truth about what your spouse has done, and then completely, unselfrighteously, and joyously express forgiveness without a shred of superiority, without making the other person feel small. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Yeah, it's a tall order. It's a really tall order. And this is what I want to talk about today. This is what I felt like God was getting me to land on today, is how might we bring this skill into all of our relationships, and if you're married, specifically your marriage. Because Tim then says, I don't have the quote written up, but I'll just read it to you. He says, this is particularly hard in marriage because, he says, and there's the great problem of marriage. The one person in the whole world who holds your heart in her hand, whose approval and affirmation you most long for and need, is the one who is hurt more deeply by your sins than anyone else on the planet. That's why this is so hard. Because we're not kind of stepping back objectively, watching someone we care about, you know, doing destructive behavior or something maybe we need to speak into. Usually the destructive behavior is coming toward us. And so to come in from that place of love and that attitude of forgiveness is so much more work, because we're coming in as a place of being defensive and hurt. It's a lot harder to lovingly admonish your spouse for an offense when you're the one who's offended. So how might we practically create this kind of space in our marriage where we can, as it says in Ephesians 4, instead speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. So let's return to the text. It says in Colossians 3, verse 12, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. So there's so much in this. If you literally just typed out those verses, like 12 through 14, and then taped them on your mirror and just decide, I'm going to just try to do this. I'm going to just try to like lean into this. Like, that alone could begin to impact any relationship around you, especially your marriage. But if we could give one word to summarize all this, I would say it's grace. The process of receiving God's grace, his undeserved, freely given love and favor, and then choosing to extend that grace to others, starting with our spouse, is the essence of the Christian life. This goes against our fallen nature and instincts, and at times honestly feels impossible to do. But this is the only way we are spiritually formed into our true selves, is doing this hard work of receiving the grace of God, recognizing that we need it, and then learning how to give it away, choosing to give it away. And this is why the continual intentional practice of this in the context of marriage has the potential for profound spiritual formation. So we start by daily steeping ourselves into the grace of God with humility. We recognize we need forgiveness. We need the grace of God. Sitting in his presence, we soak in his love. We get the shame off. We remember who we are, hidden, our life hidden with Christ on high. And it's by the power of his indwelling spirit that we can extend this grace even when we don't feel like it. Because offering grace, loving someone, is not based on your feelings. It is a choice. It is an act of your will. The feelings will show up usually after we extend it. You'd be surprised how much those feelings of love and grace flood the room when you've taken a step of obedience into acting on it. And so how might we, what does an environment of grace look like? Colossians says it looks like kindness and humility. So how do you demonstrate kindness in your marriage? Do you know how love and kindness is best communicated to your spouse? So many of you are familiar with the book that's been around forever called The Love Languages. I have actually never read it. I've just like hear about it enough that I feel like I like have the summary of the book. And it was really funny because a friend of mine who's not a follower of Jesus, she actually doesn't even believe in God, was reading it herself because of her own struggles in her marriage, and I was shocked. But your spouse has a specific way that they receive love and hear love. Like, it speaks to them in a certain way. Like, I feel loved when you do this. And so mine, if you want to know, is acts of service. And I'm just using this opportunity to remind Dave. That's my personal love language. And so when Dave does anything around the house to support the functioning and flourishing of our house and family, especially when not being asked, I am in love. I mean, literally, I am, like, it speaks to my heart. Because it says to me, that act says to me, that you and our kids and our home is my highest priority, and I know it alleviates your anxiety and brings you peace and joy when our home is functioning well. And so in all honesty, I would rather have Dave mate socks or fix a squeaky door than, like, buy me a piece of jewelry or bring me flowers. Like, that's, because that's what speaks to me. I know some of you out there are like, dude, I want the jewelry and the flowers, because that speaks to you. But no, like, folding laundry speaks to me. Playing Monopoly with the kids speaks to me. Running to the grocery store for an errand. Doing the dishes without being asked. Like, those, walking the dog, which he hates to do. I'm like, ah, thank you. It says I see you. I'm trying to alleviate, you know, I'm trying to bring peace into your life. And I'm trying to help support the functioning of our home. And that's just what speaks to me. His love language is different. Do you know what your spouse's is? If you, my guess is most of you, if you're married, do already know, you have a hunch. If you don't know, ask. Like, hey, what do I do or what could I do that would communicate love to you? Scott Peck, if you're familiar with him, the author of The Road Less Traveled, he defines love this way. He says, love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. And then he goes on to say, love is as love does. Love is an act of the will, namely both an intention and an action. Will also implies choice. We do not have to love, we choose to love. Now, that just sounds super unromantic. Like, the feelings come and go. They are still part of it. But they are not always there. They are not, sometimes they are nowhere to be found. And this is where the true call into marriage, the true call into any relationship of self-sacrificial love, this is an act of the will. This is where Jesus was obedient to the Father and went to the cross out of love for us. This was a choice to sacrifice himself for us. And we have daily choices to self-sacrificial love. And it's a choice, an act of the will. And we have to be intentional about it because it's not our default mode. Our default mode is selfish ambition, honestly. Everyone's insecure and needy and hurt and all the stuff. And that's okay. That's just our default mode as fallen humanity. And so we have to go against the grain to make choices of loving other people. And so it, for whatever reason, it is significantly, it takes significantly more intentionality to affirm and demonstrate gratitude for how someone is showing up than it does to complain and criticize and demonstrate disappointment. It just does. So like I said, our default is typically dissatisfaction. Most of us are dissatisfied with our jobs, with our home, with our spouses, with our kids. We just lean into dissatisfaction. We have to choose to affirm and acknowledge and show gratitude. And so how often do we thank our spouse for just even like things that we would expect? Like, thanks for working today to help provide for our family. Thanks for unloading the dishwasher, for cooking dinner, for taking the kids to practice, for making me a cup of coffee. And it does not matter if these tasks are inside or outside some preconceived gender stereotypes. Like, you know, sometimes I'll hear women say, like, why do I have to thank my husband for watching the kids while I did yoga? Like, he's their dad. Well, just do it anyway. Just, like, affirm and recognize and show gratitude for who your spouse is and the way that they show up and contribute to your family in the simple and beautiful moments and qualities that emerge. As I said earlier, we have a front row seat to the best and worst of our spouse. And if you're married to a human, you have likely been disappointed by him or her. But you alone have the privilege of seeing the hidden, magical moments and qualities that they have. I, more than anyone, see Dave's deepest insecurities and struggles and shortcomings. And I, more than anyone, have seen the most heroic sides of Dave. I have seen sides of him that he'll never get publicly recognized for, that he'll never get paid for, that likely no one but me will ever be aware of or even notice, which means I'm the only one who can acknowledge and affirm and show gratitude for him in these ways that are the truest sides of him. And so this is how we begin to cultivate a foundation of love that can bear the truth, because we do also need to tell the truth. We also need to assist each other. We also need to do, as it says in verse 13, bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And this is probably the most difficult command and the most important. We need to remember that we needed and still need to be forgiven. Often when we hold grudges against someone, when we fail to forgive our spouse, it's because of our pride, which we have a sense of superiority. We think, I would never do that. I would never sink that low. I'm not capable of that kind of sin. And we deny the depth of our own sinful nature and selfish ambition. And listen, I'm not minimizing the hurt that can be caused and experienced by being sinned against. And the Bible even says there's some situations where reconciliation may not be possible, but forgiveness is always required. And our ability to receive and enjoy the forgiveness offered to us through Christ's sacrifice is dependent on our choice to offer this forgiveness to others, starting with our spouse. It's a mysterious supernatural transaction, but our internal freedom and our capacity to love and receive love is dependent on it. And you need to choose the path of forgiveness before you even address the offense. So it's in this context of a covenant relationship that says, I'm committed to you for as long as I live. I choose to intentionally love you by recognizing your true hidden self with Christ, acknowledging and affirming you with words of affirmation and demonstrations of love in your love language. It's in this context that I will tell you the truth about your false self, about the way you hurt me, about the way you're showing up. I've heard this process explained similar to a rock tumbler. Have any of you ever like done a rock tumbler thing where you try to take rocks and then you like circle them around for like days and they're supposed to come out gems? I have, with both my boys, bought these over the years and spent days doing the stupid rock tumbler, and we always lose. This keeps happening. We always lose. Somehow we lose one of the compounds, or we forget to put one of the little packets of compound in, and it never works. And it's super frustrating. Anyway, the way they describe the rock tumbler situation in marriage is like you're two rocks like bouncing off each other, right? But you need that compound in order for like the gem to show up. The compound is like God's grace. The compound isn't in there. You will either just bounce off each other and you'll avoid telling the truth, you'll avoid conflict because it's too hard and painful and awkward, and then you lose all the potential for growth, or you crash into each other and just shatter each other because all you're doing is getting each other's faces, telling the truth without the grace and the forgiveness and the love. And so what we need is that compound of grace that creates the environment where we can do both, where we can love and affirm each other, but we can speak the truth without shattering the person. But we can speak the truth so we don't just bounce off each other, so we actually have the potential of growing individually and then together. And so most couples lean either too far toward telling the truth all the time and they're constantly complaining, criticizing, or attacking each other, or out of fear of alienation, they think they're honoring or loving the other by just letting things go, just squelching the anger and the frustration, the disappointment, by not calling things out without sharing things you've noticed. And then as a result, you short-circuit the potential for that person's spiritual growth. And so, and quite honestly, when I've seen this happen, I see them kind of losing themselves in the process. So you might have, in some cases, like a wife that, for lack of a better term, is very high maintenance. Maybe she's super needy or perfectionist or overly sensitive or easily triggered and offended, and the husband's like, I just got to keep this person happy because I got to live with her. And so the husband begins to accommodate, shrink, withhold, pull away, maybe work extra hours, just avoid, do whatever it takes to keep mama happy so the house is happy, right? And then what happens? Well, the husband loses a little bit of himself. The wife never grows. He's not growing because he's just like shrinking away. And then it starts to impact the relationship. And so that's one option of how we deal with the difficulty of when stuff arises. The other option is to be screaming at each other and then cracking each other open. And so we're not called to do either. We're called to live in that awkward, tumbling around in God's grace and trying to bring together the truth and love, which is hard to do, and it takes a lot of intentionality. And so I'm just going to close our time with some little practical thoughts on how we might do this. So I'll give you an example from my own life. It can feel really risky to be honest and vulnerable and tell someone how their behavior is hurting you. It's not just hard to hear, it's hard to do, right? Because we feel exposed. And I think this can be actually really hard sometimes for men to do, who aren't necessarily like, not commonplace for me to say, I was hurt. This is how you made me feel. And to go to that like kind of deeper place. And I remember once Dave and I were out on a date at a Peruvian restaurant eating tacos or whatever. And I'm not sure how we got led to this conversation. But somehow we were just talking about our relationship in some way. And we had, for whatever reason, we were in a safe, we'd both kind of given each other like a safe space to be honest and be real. And in it, Dave began to share that at times I can be really, the way I interact with him can be really critical. And that it's not just bouncing off his thick skin, it's actually going deep and it's really hurting him. And as he shared it, he was getting really emotional and the tears started spilling, which of course broke my heart. And then I start crying and here we are awkwardly over our tacos crying at this Peruvian restaurant, and I end up going over and hugging him, and we're both crying, and it's a super awkward moment. But what had happened was he felt safe enough to risk being vulnerable and honest. His normal response to me being critical might be defensive or come back with anger or just withdrawal or avoid, but he told me the truth. This is what you do, and this is how I receive it. And because he felt safe enough to be vulnerable and open with me, I could hear it and receive it. And that was my job, was to kind of sit in the sadness and the grief I felt that something I had been doing was hurting the person I love most in the world. And so our roles are to do both. I'd love to say that I've never been critical toward Dave again, but that's probably not true. But in that moment, we let our guards down. Grace gave us both the space to tell the truth, and it changed me. And we've had many of those kinds of conversations, and the hope is each one changes you just a little, where you begin to intentionally show up in a different way. So this means two things for you. You need to be willing to step up to the plate and speak the truth, which is vulnerable and risky and scary, and you need to give your spouse permission to speak the truth to you. You also need to be willing to receive it. I said this a couple weeks ago, we all need to give permission to each other to speak the truth in love to us. We need to have people in our lives. Your closest friends should be people that don't just give you lip service, but tell you the truth about who you are and how you're showing up. We need to take off the armor, let down our guard, stop defending ourselves, and look in the mirror, which is often the faces of the people closest to us, including our spouse looking back on us. Marriage is the most powerful mirror you're ever going to have. And when we know we are loved, when we know our spouse is committed to us and are flourishing, when we know we're on the same team, this is the best place to receive honest reflections about how we're showing up. But we can receive it if we know our spouse is for us. Now, like I said, if you're thinking, I don't know if my spouse is committed to my flourishing. Okay, again, I'm not talking to your spouse right now. I'm talking to you. You need to be committed to your spouse's flourishing, and you need to be open to hearing the truth. And you need to receive it without getting defensive or putting your armor up. You need to, like, take it in, sit with it a little bit, because that's how you will grow up. That's how you will be spiritually formed. So, I'm going to end here. I'm going to skip a little bit. I'm just going to end with this little last bit. We need to remember that shame has no place in our home and in our relationship. It's been dismantled on the cross of Jesus Christ. This is why we get so reactive and defensive, because shame rises up. Shame is not part of your story. It has been taken care of. Part of the return to Eden is the freedom to be naked and unashamed, to be exposed and vulnerable in front of someone else without shame. We look at each other with the knowledge that the other is an unrepeatable image bearer of God whose life is hidden with Christ, and I know that I'm not superior to you. We both need God's grace daily to move toward our true selves. And then from there, we can take a breath, lower our shields, take off the armor, stop defending and deflecting, and really listen to each other. Listen to how your spouse is experiencing you, and listen to how your spouse needs you to show up for him or her. Because the purpose of our marriage is not to find our completion in another person, but to love sacrificially day in and day out, so that we are formed more and more into our true selves, which is hidden with Christ in God. Now, before we move into a time of worship, I just want to offer some practical steps forward that you might consider taking if you're married and some things were stirred with you in this talk. Like I said, the Tim Keller's book is excellent, and I have a copy if anyone wants it. That's something you could do together. There's even a little workbook you could do together. I also highly recommend Emotionally Focused, which is for everybody. And we have a foundation coming up at the Grafton Vineyard, December 2nd and 3rd. I would say that, honestly, the emotional, two things have probably helped my marriage the most, the emotionally focused process and good marriage counseling. Those are like two of the best tools because what happens in emotionally focused is all this stuff I've been talking about of speaking the truth and receiving it and growing from it, that's what this is all about. So this works for all your relationships, but even if you do it by yourself, it benefits your marriage. A good marriage counselor will give you tools to have these kind of awkward, difficult, painful conversations with each other. And each one, you grow in intimacy, you grow in love and connection, and you grow up yourself. You can only change yourself. I'm sure you've heard that before. So you start with yourself, right? So that's a good option. We have also talked about starting a course here. It's an 8-week course called Alpha Marriage. And if you're familiar at all with the Alpha program, Alpha as a big thing is geared a little bit more toward having really open conversation about faith with people coming from all different kinds of backgrounds. Alpha Marriage is specifically about sort of a biblical, practical perspective of what marriage is for, why it was created, and a lot of the things I talked about today, but it kind of breaks it down to little videos and then discussion afterwards. And so this is something we're talking about doing soon at our church offering. I would just like to know, I know of some people interested, I'd like to get an idea of who all is interested, so then I'll have a better sense of where and when we would meet and the logistics around it. So if you are interested, like, oh, this sounds like something really doable. It's an 8-week commitment, not a ton of homework, and it won't change your whole marriage, but it will give you a good foundation for how to think about your marriage. So if you're interested in that, just come tell me, hey, I think I'd be interested in that. Yeah, I think those are all my practical suggestions. So before we move into a time of worship and ministry, I want to take communion together, but I want to invite a number of you to respond. I know that anytime you talk about marriage, I'm guessing there's not a single person in this room that's not triggered by something. Did anybody not get triggered today? You're the one, my one non-triggered person, right? So we're either triggered because we're single and we'd like to get married. We're either triggered because we're divorced and we like look back and we wonder about our marriage, or we're triggered because things aren't going well in my marriage, or I mean, there's just like on and on and on, right? Like this is just a difficult topic. And so we prayed this morning that there would be a blanket of grace over this service, that there would be no guilt over the past or shame or fear of the future, that we would be just very present to what God has for us today. And so often when we're triggered, that is an opportunity for God to bring healing or freedom or his grace into that area. And so right now, like whatever your trigger was, whether you're like, oh, I'm feeling some pangs of sadness or grief or guilt over something, God wants to bring his saving grace into that. He wants to bring his love and his freedom into that. If you're hit, you're like, I'm just really challenged and freaked out. This is too much. We just want to come alongside of you and say, hey, this is day by day. Right foot, left foot, one step at a time. You do not have to revamp and become a new person overnight. We're here to journey with you and come alongside and support you. I've been married 26 years. It is still hard and it's still wonderful, but it's still hard. Marriage takes maintenance. You have to pay attention to it. It doesn't just, like, you don't get married and then it just all works out. It takes real intentionality to have a flourishing marriage. And so that's just what we're about. Come alongside of you, whatever your next step is. So those are like my two invitations. If you were just stirred up by something, there's some kind of like trigger in your system. God wants to set you free. He wants to heal you. He wants to meet you in that. And if you're like, hey, I feel like I maybe want to take a step forward and I'm just a little overwhelmed, then we just want to come alongside and say, hey, God, what might this look like for you to take a step forward? Maybe it's just like, hey, I'm going to figure out what my spouse's love language is. Maybe it's like, hey, I'm going to do the Alpha Marriage. Or maybe we need a marriage counselor. Maybe we're at that place. You don't wait till your marriage is in crisis to tend to your marriage. You do it every day. Okay? So wherever you are, how might God be inviting you to take a next step? And so please come and receive prayer. There'll be people at my left, your right, in the back that would be delighted to come alongside and pray for you. Don't leave today with your head down. Right? God is the lifter of our heads. So whatever's happening inside of you, come in and let God meet you in that place.
Thanks for listening to the Vineyard Milwaukee podcast. For more information, go to vineyardmilwaukee.com.